Today, I wanted to talk about how to protect yourself for when a power exchange relationship ends. And essentially, all relationships can end, and all relationships can end in a horrible, flaming dumpster fire. Like, it's not exclusive to BDSM relationships in any way, shape, or form. However, BDSM relationships happen to usually include a lot more dependency on one another. You might have one person who always does a certain type of task for the other. You might have one person who's always in control of the other. And essentially, you just end up with a little more codependence than is usually found in non-power exchange and non-kinky relationships. And it would seem that this advice would maybe be more slanted towards S types. And by that, I mean those who identify as the submissive, the bottom, the slave, whatever they identify as, the person whoever takes the orders from the other person. And that isn't necessarily the case here. Either side of like the slash, including like if your relationship has four slashes because there's 10 people involved, either side of a relationship can get stuck in the same codependent habits. And that's not necessarily, again, a bad thing. It's just more that when these types of relationships tend to end, if you're really in it deep, you're lost and floundering a lot more than might be normally seen in a non-power exchange relationship. So it's mostly a matter of what we do as kinksters and people in power exchange relationships tends to be outside of what a lot of other people consider a normal relationship experience. For example, it might be nothing for the two of you to decide that one person has constant access to an online account and even changes a password so that the other person doesn't access it. That may be completely like just part of your dynamic. You just thought about it, it's Tuesday, whatever. That might be a red flag if you both weren't kinky and into it. So it's just our types of relationships in power exchange tend to get a little more involved and dependent on one another than what is considered standard in a lot of non-power exchange. And what ends up happening, like if you're trying to protect yourself in case a relationship breaks up, so you just wanting to make sure you still have you at the end of all of this, and what it really boils down to, if you're trying to keep yourself at the end of this relationship, if it ever ends, is risk tolerance. And just like everything we do in kink, there is a tolerance for risk you either do or do not have. Some activities might be too risky for you, so you pass. Other activities might be totally okay, and you accept the risk for those things in order to participate in the activity. And that's kind of how it ends up here when you're trying to protect yourself in case of a BDSM relationship ending. And when it comes to something that's so built into a relationship, it's harder to negotiate than something like, I'm not comfortable doing rope suspensions in case of nerve damage. Like, that's a very simple, I don't want to do this activity because here's why. And it really doesn't impact anything else in our relationship. It's just, here's an activity, has zero bearing on you as a person, as my partner. And the activity has the risk. Whereas when we start talking about stuff like this, which is more, it relates more to the relationship itself, we start having more difficult conversations. And that's because it turns into a trust kind of thing. And that's difficult for a lot of people, myself included, not going to say it's not. Like, take, for example, if it's coming down to protecting yourself in case of a kinky relationship ending, something you might choose to do is to ensure that you're never in any sort of photographs that can be potentially damaging for you. And that kind of activity, it's not like the photograph itself has damage. The photograph, it's not that the photograph blinds you when it gets taken. It's that whoever possesses the photograph could potentially do something terrible with it. And that's when we start running into those difficult conversations, because it's about figuring out where your boundaries lie and where you're comfortable going. And that's going to be different for every relationship you're in. And it's going to change over time, depending on the relationship, depending on the trust level, depending on what's going on in that relationship. For example, taking those same photos, like let's say it's doing a blowjob or doing something kinky together, taking photos of you two doing that together and letting the other person have it, if it's a one night stand, could be extremely problematic. You don't have that trust kind of built in there. But if you refuse to allow any photos of the two of you on, let's say, year 10 of your relationship, that might start to become a sticking point and a why don't you trust me kind of point. So all of this turns into this delicate balancing act between trust and intimacy and what you're okay with doing and still protecting yourself. And that means there's no like specifically awesomely clear-cut way to do this. And that sucks, because I'd love to give you like, here's the clear-cut step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you are protected and good to go. And that's not really how this looks. It turns into something where you need to understand the risks, accept that the reality is that sometimes relationships don't work. And that's normal and that's okay. It's not necessarily a reflection on you. Sometimes they don't work even when they seem magical. Sometimes something comes up later on. And that's a rough reality, because we don't want to think that way about ourselves. It's kind of like having those conversations about what you would like to happen in case of your death, or setting up your wills or things like that. It's just one of those things where we're planning ahead, and the discussions we need to have are hard because we don't want the outcomes, and that sucks. And what you're willing to risk and where your trust level is and where your intimacy level is going to be very different from where mine might be or where your partner's might be. And essentially what I'm saying is these conversations are going to suck, but you got to have them. The conversations need to match the depth and commitment and the length of your relationship. For example, you wouldn't talk about what your prenup will look like on the first date. That would be terrifying. But that's kind of the conversation you need to have if marriage is in talks and it's a BDSM. It's just, if marriage is in talks in general, that's probably one of those things you want to talk about. So it turns into what level and where in seriousness and commitment are the two of you? What do you want to talk about? Where are your risk levels? Like, what happens if the two of you break up? How do you maintain your independence in this relationship while still giving your all to the kinky dynamic the two of you are getting into? How do you maintain your sense of self and your safety of yourself in case the worst happens? And what the two of you can both do to make sure that happens. And even if you have the coolest relationship on the planet and it's never ever going to end, ever. Like, you're just going to tell me that, and that's cool. I will accept that. Whatever makes your life easier, just remember that we can't always plan for the crappy things that happen. It's always plan for the worst and hope for the best. Because if something happens to your partner and they die, it wasn't a conscious breakup. It wasn't a decision. It's just you're left in the same spot. So whichever side of the slash you're on, I'm hoping to give you some tips here to help protect yourself in case your relationship ends for any given reason. And what this kind of looks like is having the means to support yourself financially, mentally, physically, and emotionally. And I'm hoping some of these things give you something to think about, some steps to take, some things to look into, because it's not something that's necessarily talked about often. I see a lot of advice and podcasts and articles about what to do when your relationship ends to support yourself, to get back to normalcy, but a lot of them don't focus on the things you might want to do in the relationship to make sure that your life is okay and all the practical things of your life are okay when or if the relationship ends. And that's kind of where I'm at. So I'm trying to help. What your version of protection and preparedness and risk tolerance is won't look like mine, but here are some of the things that I recommend looking into to make sure you're okay in case a relationship ends. And one of the first ones is to ensure that you have the finances to live if a relationship ends. And I know a lot of kinky people like to hand over finances to their partner, and that's totally cool. Like, I'm not saying don't do that. I know some people are nervous about finances, and finances tend to be one of those super touchy subjects, even if you're not kinky. It's just money. Something about money just makes us all kind of like bristle, and I get it. But regardless of which side of the slash you're on, both people in the relationship need to have separate financial accounts to some extent. And by that, what I mean is if you are not the one in charge of all of the money, you still need to have some money. And you can easily set this up without ever needing to touch it. Okay, I lied. You're going to have to touch it sometimes. But you can set this up without touching it often. And you can still leave the dynamic and the money from the dynamic in the other person's hands and still be protected in case something happens. So what you can do here is, if you are the person trying to protect yourself, make sure that you do have a financial account. Have that probably not fun conversation with your partner about making sure you have something to protect yourself. And you can even automate this. So set it up that whoever's in charge of finances will send money to that account every month. You both can discuss on what that money is. That's entirely up to you, what your standard of living is, what you all can afford, who has jobs, how much those jobs make, etc., etc. But whoever's in charge of money should send money to the other financial account once a month. So, for example, I can send funds to my partner's account, which I do to pay some bills, but I can't take any funds out of that account or do anything with that account. It's just that our accounts are linked up as a frequent person I pay, and I can easily send them payments, and they can do with what they want with those payments. So it's something you can set up. If you are the person who has this separate financial account, ensure that you keep ownership of it. Ensure that you have the password to it. And I know you don't want to touch it, and I get it, but like once a year, check out the account and make sure that the payments are being sent and that everything's running smoothly. I recommend doing it more often if things seem a little weird in the relationship, but that's always your call and what you want to do. While we are discussing finances, let's continue on it and make sure that the two of you discuss retirements. It can be easy, especially if you are a stay-at-home person and the other person is a breadwinner who also controls the finances, to not have any retirement plans. Essentially, you need to know what your retirement looks like, and if you're not in charge of money, you need to have some general idea of what the other person is doing to ensure your retirement. A lot of people, and I get why, it's not really taught, it's difficult, etc., are not particularly knowledgeable about saving for retirement. So this may not even be anything malicious, it just may be that the other person doesn't think about retirement, doesn't have the funds, etc., etc., for retirement. So this may not be malicious, but you both should have a conversation about retirement, what's being done to ensure both people have some sort of retirement plans, even if the other, even if one of them never touches money. So that's another way that you can kind of protect yourself. Because if you end up in a 20-year relationship you got into when you were 20 and you turn 40 and the relationship ends for whatever reason, sudden death, relationships change, a breakup, whatever, you don't want to make it to 40 to find out that there have never been any concrete plans for retirement, because you're now late on the ball game, and that's, it's just not a good place to be. It's stressful. It's rough. So let's avoid that if we can by making sure we talk about it ahead of time. Another way to plan financially is to make all joint purchases together if multiple finances are involved. We're talking about big purchases, not like I want to talk about which candy bar to get. We're not talking about that. We're talking about big purchases. If it's going to be a couple thousand, if it's going to be tens of thousands, it's whatever you and your budget determines big. When I wrote this and thought about it, I think of anything that has noticeable resellable value in the future. So homes, cars, really big investment things in your home, whatever it is that you two happen to purchase together. Make sure it's in both of your names, or at the very least, make sure it's a conscious choice not to include both names for whatever reason, credit scores, etc. That way, in case things go down in the future, there will be legal ways to ensure that you still have portions of that. There are so many different ways to divvy up homes legally within multiple names. So don't think it's going to be difficult or hard. It's actually going to be, you're going to have your choice about how you'd like to put two names on a home, essentially. And that's kind of cool. I know, if I remember the person, I should have looked this up ahead of hand. If I remember the person that does an amazing BDSM in the law class, I will put that in the show notes for you to reference, because that would be absolutely fantastic for figuring this out and figuring out what some of your options are. Especially polyamory in the law can be another good one to listen to, because you will learn what different options are available out there for you, even if you're not married or if you're in some sort of polyamorous relationship that isn't simple legally. Another cool way to make sure that you stay safe in case of a relationship ending is to make sure that your skills don't lapse if you stay at home for whatever reason. If you're a stay-at-home parent, stay-at-home sub, stay-at-home slave, whatever you do, if you primarily stay at home and do not have a standard job in whatever way we're defining job anymore, you want to make sure your skills don't lapse. A lot of people find, especially stay-at-home parents, once the kids go back to school, trying to get back into the workforce after 18 years of no work experience is ridiculously tough. And if this is an emergency, so the break ended suddenly, something happened, finances aren't great, you don't want to be in crunch time to get a job if you need to get a job. To make sure that you don't let those skills lapse, you can keep a part-time job. If you don't want to work or have no interest in working, you can consider regularly volunteering in ways that use good skills that could be applicable to a career field that you either want or had or would enjoy. And then you can give back to people and also ensure that you have some sort of marketable talent in the future, which is kind of cool. You can also do what we're all doing in this magical gig economy and do some sort of side gig or side job to add extra money to the household and extra money to your own account and the joint account and keep your skills up all at the same time. You're going to want to talk these things out with your partner, because any of these do have a time commitment associated with them. And that's just kind of the nice thing to do, especially in BDSM relationships where somebody usually is in charge. But you'll want to have a talk with your partner. And if your partner is extremely opposed to any of these reasons without any concrete reasons as to why, that can easily be a red flag. Part of the controlling abusive methodology is ensuring that the abused stays nicely isolated, and jobs can provide social networks and getting out of the house and all the things. So it's just one of those things to look out for. I mean, if there are valid reasons, and there are valid reasons not to get jobs, I mean, if there are things that need to be done around the house that the other person can't handle, if the money is completely fine, if we still need to take care of children, if there are dependents, there are valid reasons that fitting a new job or experience into your time is not going to fit. But if they don't have any concrete reasons, just, it's a red flag. Think about it. Figure out what's going on. So let's move out of finances and talk about something else. And that would be a support network. All of us tend to be social in some way, shape, or form. If you're like me, you're this closet introvert. But that isn't the case for everyone. You might be an extrovert. You might just not have that many friends in the area you recently moved to. Whichever the case is, you need to ensure that you have a social support network in case something happens. This doesn't need to be huge. In fact, I'd say relying on a couple friends over having acquaintances with tens of hundreds is probably better off for you. But you do want to have some sort of social support network. It can be family, it can be friends, it can be coworkers. They don't have to be kinky. That can help. But everyone universally understands the ending of relationships, and they understand how much they suck. That's just kind of a universal thing. So they don't have to be kinky to be there for you in case something happens. Social networks can make it easier to make it through a breakup. And with how deep some of our power exchange relationships tend to run and how dependent they can run, it's going to be very helpful to have someone there for you. As another common thread to what we were talking about earlier, if your partner is extremely opposed or concerned about you having these friends or making new friends, another red flag. It's entirely normal not to like certain people. Like, I am probably the queen of not liking certain people, but it's still, people still have to make time for you to make friends. So if that isn't happening and it isn't being respected, again, another red flag. Just something to keep in mind. While we're talking about ways that you can access those social connections, let's talk about your accounts, and especially your online accounts, because most of us have a bunch of online accounts at this point. We just kind of live our lives online and offline, and that's okay. But the point is, you need to retain knowledge of all of your passwords to your accounts. If your kinky dynamic includes not having access to those accounts, that's fine. If your partner can't trust you not to access those accounts, there's another problem at play. So you should still have the ability to access them and know the passwords, but that doesn't mean that you are allowed to access them via your dynamic and in-person kinky rules and whatnot. So it isn't just enough to know the passwords either. You need to make sure the passwords aren't changed and taken from you, especially if your relationship's seeming a little weird lately for whatever reason. So I recommend asking or finding a way that works for your dynamic to check those accounts on occasion, not often, but just to make sure that the passwords work. So you may consider changing the rules within your restrictions to reflect that, such as if we're talking about FetLife. Your rule may be that you're not allowed to look at your messages versus not allowed to log in, or you're not allowed to read anything on you're not allowed to interact with the platform, but you are allowed to log in. Those kind of different rule changes can allow you to make sure you stay safe and have access to all of your private data in case of a breakup or a relationship ending, while still respecting the kinky dynamic that whatever you have going on with you and your partner. If you do happen to be tech savvy, I also recommend getting your own private backup email address and setting it as the secondary email for any account that allows that. You know, that email, it says, we'll send you an email to your secondary backup email because you've forgotten your password. Yeah, make sure that that one is a separate private email that you have access to. Again, nobody likes to plan for these things, but in case something happens, it's not like your partner needs access to this secondary email in order to restrict your access for play. So ensure that you have access of the backup email just in case. That's always what we're planning for here, is just in case. So let's talk about other kind of basic things. And this one seems kind of counter, like this one seems like it might be common sense, but it's one of those running jokes a lot of people have for like the men of the house. You can't see me making finger quotes, but I was. So make sure you have basic knowledge of what foods you eat, especially if you have allergies or any special needs that involve food. So what brands, what recipes. I am constantly surprised by how many people don't really know what they ingest, especially if it's the work of the other partner to take care of what we're ingesting. Even my parents, who I don't think were kinky, I can't promise this, I don't want to think about it, but I don't think my parents were kinky. And my dad had zero idea of what kind of foods we ate or what brands we ate, and you'd send him to the store to pick up like mashed potatoes and he'd come back with like brand 7, and we always have brand 1, and brand 1 has been the only thing I've seen in the house since I've been like 2, and you're just like, what? Do you ever look in our cupboards? And that can be one of the pitfalls of someone always preparing meals and doing all the shopping and doing all the caretaking of the home, is if you're not the person doing that, you don't have knowledge of what goes on to upkeep all these things and what goes on to what food you eat. And if you've grown to know and love various recipes or foods, or it's required by your stomach or you're going to have a bad day, this is just part of taking care of yourself and making sure you're okay if something happens. Because otherwise, if the relationship ends, you're at square one for your food, you don't really know what you eat, and now you're going to be dealing with physical discomfort on top of all of the mental anguish of a breakup. And that's just like you don't need that. You don't need that in your life. Have a basic knowledge. If whoever takes care of the food and the shopping, you can command them to write down the recipes. It's as simple as knowing what's going into your body. It's just, we don't always take the time to do it because we're always busy. So that's another thing you can prepare in case something happens. Another, and I promise we're almost near the end, another way to make sure that you're okay if the relationship ends is to make sure that you're going to be mentally okay. And what a lot of our kink dynamics look like, especially when you start getting in really, really deep into codependency, whether that's accidental, whether that's intentional, it can feel like you're maybe not capable of doing some of the things that you really actually are capable of. So in my case, like, I will use an example for me. I probably could actually change a flat tire. But because every time a flat tire happens, I have people I can make change it for me, I mentally don't think, or I'm not 100% sure I can change a flat tire. And that's just one example, but we kind of have all those little examples all over our daily lives. And that's because we have somebody to always call on that's better at it or more proficient, or we just don't want to do it, so they do it. And if that other person isn't there and this flat tire happens to me, I'm going to feel helpless and I'm going to feel not good. And especially if this is happening in the middle of a breakup and, oh my God, this used to be what they used to do and I can't do it and I can't believe I'm stuck and I can't. It spirals. It spirals so quickly. And to combat that, and I need to take my own advice apparently, is to just make sure that you both are regularly reassuring yourself that you're capable and amazing and can do all the things that you need to do on your own. And that can include just making sure that you do some of the things you normally assign out. Do them yourself instead sometimes. This can include taking a couple light dynamic days where you both kind of do things for yourself to remind yourselves of how capable you are of doing these things. It can look like challenging yourself to do the things or asking your more proficient partner at whatever the thing is to supervise you or watch over or show you how to do the thing to make sure in case something happens or there's an emergency or they aren't there, that you can still take care of yourself in the way that needs to be done. And on the bright side, you'll have a better appreciation for your partner after you do some of these things for yourself too. Because I've watched them change tires. And yeah, I definitely think if I had to do it myself, I'd be like, oh God, thankfully they do this because I really appreciate it because that sucked. So you also get a cool bonus to your relationship and more appreciation for the things they do. And that's pretty good too. I also, now that we're going to like move on, I recommend having experienced kinky friends. And if you can't have those in person, I recommend having at least an experienced kink community, whether that's online or in person. And these people need to have experience with real kinky relationships in real life. And that needs to be stated because there is a lot of fantasy speak that goes on online, even from people who claim they've been doing kink for 8 zillion quadrillion years. And this is important, especially if you're new, because A, you have a sounding board, and B, if some of these things start happening, like your partner tells you that I am taking command over your social networks, and you're like, oh God, that's so hot. And if they say, I am going to take over what you always eat, and I'm going to make sure I always cook it, and you won't know what's in it, and you're like, oh my God, that's so hot. And it can be hot. It's definitely hot. When it's in a experienced, trusting relationship. And that's one of the things that somebody who's experienced can help you with. Because people who are outside your dynamic can look at that and say, hey, you guys have only been together 2 weeks. This isn't normal. Because it can be normal to do those things. But when all those things are done on an accelerated, extremely fast timeline without the structure built around them, they can turn into abuse. And that's part of what we're always preaching in kink and BDSM is making sure that the consent and all of the informed consent and the trust and the relationship and all those things are built up before you get into some of the control. Because some people, the abusers, honestly, will say, well, this is how it is. If you want to be my sub on week 2, you give me all your passwords. And somebody who's experienced can say, that's not normal. That's not how any real, finger quote, any safe person will operate, run. And it's weird to find that tip on a list for like protecting yourself in a breakup, but having these experienced friends and community can ensure that you avoid some of these circumstances to begin with. And that's worth its weight in gold. Honestly, it really is. I think my final point is a very, very simple one. And that's to not let any body modifications get in the way of your ability to live your life. And this is coming from someone who loves behavior modifications and loves body modifications and loves erotic hypnosis. And it's not to any shame of any kinks or any modifications, but some kinks and some modifications can make it difficult to live life without someone there to help. Extreme fetishism could be one example. If you use erotic hypnosis to train orgasms to certain triggers, if you're now gone, the trigger's now gone, and that can make someone completely inorgasmic and need a whole bunch of time to be able to have their orgasms again. Just anything that modifies or changes life in a way that it's harder for you to live it by yourself, try to ensure you're doing what you can to build in ways to protect the receiver of these kinks in case something happens. If that's extreme fetishism, you both might agree to a certain weight limit or a certain body or activity limit where you might pull things back for a little bit to get them under control. If that's erotic hypnosis, you both might agree that all hypnosis and all regularly trained activities need to have some sort of backup trigger or a way for the person to set it off themselves. It's just some kinks really, really can get in our brains, and that's kind of why we love them, because they are so deep and so ingrained, and it's so hard to change those things about someone. But we just need to make sure that if something happens, that someone can still do things for themselves in whatever way that looks for them. And that's kind of everything I had. It's just really the biggest thing is to just watch out for yourself. Make sure that you're realistic, even though realistic conversations suck and they're not always fun to have. But making sure that everyone's protected and safe in case something happens is so, so helpful for when the thing happens, because it's kind of like insurance and everything else that's kind of like just in case in life. You don't need it until you need it. And if you don't have it when you need it, you kick yourself and it makes your life so much harder. So make sure you plan from the get-go in whatever ways that looks for you, whatever relationship appropriate ways that looks for you, because I think all of us have seen outside of kink, inside of kink, we've seen those relationships that kind of like they just combust. You're just like, wow, Becky and Samantha were amazing together, and now they're trying to ruin each other's lives, and you're like, where the heck did that come from? And that's the most well-intentioned partners, the most amazing partners, the most amazing humans in general. We're just, if we feel like we've been wronged, some of us, myself included, like honestly, can get kind of vindictive. And when someone's vindictive and trying to ruin your life, that's not the person that you want having control of everything in your life in that moment. And even though the control's hot and kink, we just need to make sure that if that happens, or God forbid, they're just out of your life for whatever reason, we just have ways to protect ourselves on whatever side of the slash we're on. Because kink, all relationships can be bad like that, but kink is especially problematic because of how discreet we need to be and how prejudiced society still is against it. So child custody battles, even our own employment can be on the line if we're outed. And it's just, we got to take the standard, we got to take the steps to make sure we're all safe and protected to the best of our abilities and within the risk profile that we set for ourselves. And I hope some of these tips have helped you figure out what's going to be amazing and good for you.